So I got myself worked up because I spoke today to Rabbi Danziger's shir. I had no idea what to say. So I got worked up. I told him something. I thought it was very nice. So I think I want to say it again. But the truth is, I'll be Maidau Emes. I asked him a question and I gave an answer. And now I look in the Chumash and the Gur Aryeh asked my question. And I'll tell you the truth, he doesn't give my answer. So this, I guess, will not count as an official schmooze. Because the Gur Aryeh doesn't give my answer. And I didn't see anyone who gave my answer. But I didn't look around too much. But it's still a nice, so this is not meant as a schmooze. It's meant as his iris. So whether it's right shot or wrong shot, I can't tell you. It's his iris. Okay. In the beginning of Chaya Sarah, what happens? Sarah dies. Avram Avinu decides he wants to bury Sarah in the Maris HaMachpeda. Why does he want to bury Sarah in the Maris HaMachpeda? Because the Maris HaMachpeda is that's the place, right? Adam and Chava are buried in Maris HaMachpeda. I assume there's a reason why Adam and Chava were buried in the Maris HaMachpeda, because probably intrinsically there's something, we don't know mystical things, but there's probably something about Maris HaMachpeda that has some kind of all kinds of spooky Kedusha. The Maris Adam and Chava are there. That's the best place to get buried. So Avram Avinu knows, I gotta bury Sarah in Maris HaMachpeda. The problem is that he doesn't own the Maris HaMachpeda. The Maris HaMachpeda is owned by who? Ephraim. So Avram comes, and he comes to Ephraim, and he asks him, I need the Maris HaMachpeda, and I'm ready to pay. Tell me, Yitin is Maris HaMachpeda, the Kesef Mole, the highest price, Kesef Mole. Comes along Ephraim and says, Lo Adoni Shmaeini, Hasodin Asatinach, Vamara Shebal Neschon Esaticha. I'm giving it to you for free, nothing. You're a tzaddik. I want to be mahana a tzaddik, a talmid chacham. You get the Maris HaMachpeda for free, nothing. Right? Sounds good. Sounds great. My friend's very impressive. Comes on Avram and says, thank you. But he says, no way. I insist. I want to pay. I want to pay. It's okay. So our friend says, okay, listen. You want to pay, okay? So pay. Arba mil shekels kesef. Then the pasuk says, Vayishma Avram. Now here, Ephron is spelled with a vav. When he says, okay, 400. Sounds like that was maybe a valid price. I don't know. Pashas. Then it says, Vayishma Avram el Ephron. Vayishgal the Avram the Ephron without a vav. As a kesef. Arba mil shekel kesef over the soicher. So Chazar Medayek, that Avram not only gave Ephraim 400 zuz, but he gave him 400 zuz over the soicher. He gave him, there's apparently different quality of zuz, which means that I don't exactly know what it is, but apparently by us, money is money. Money is dollar bills. But in those days, coins were gold. They had weight. So there's better, there's slightly rubbed out, you know, because it's the metal. So the Avram gave him like mint coins, which were like better, the best coins that you can possibly get. So Rashi says already, that why is Ephraim written here at the end without a vav? She'omar harbe v'omar afino matlo osa. She'not the man who's called him gedoilim. He took these best coins. Okay. So I asked Rabbi Danziger this year, what did Ephraim do wrong? If you read the psukim, it says, Vayishma Avram el Ephron, Vayishko the Avram the Ephron. It's a kesef. Avram gave the money. Doesn't say Ephron asked for the better coins. Ephron goes ahead. He offers to give it for nothing. Avram says, no, I have to pay. He says, okay, you want to pay? I'll tell you the price. You ask for the price? I'll tell you the price. Avram goes ahead and shows out the best coins. Okay, so what's his fault? What do you want from him? He's trying his hard. He's trying to do what's right. Why is he blamed? He goes down in history as a bum. right? Ephron is not known in history as such a big tzaddik. He goes there as a bum. He's written without a vav. I think it sounds like a really nice guy. So the Gur Aryeh says that somehow Avram picked up from Ephraim that he wanted that. There's some remez, I don't know. And he's Kufa trying to figure out where the remez that Ephraim hinted that he wanted better coins. Okay, and he has different shot. And one shot is, okay, whatever it is. But okay. So I said a different shot. What can I do? Maybe I'm wrong. What's the shot? So I told him, what? Yeah. I told the guys in my favorite story. I'm sure the guys heard my story already. But since there are some people who didn't hear this story, so I get an excuse to say it again. Right? I told the guys the story. I apologize for the guys that heard it already. That when I was 25 years old, so I was in Eretz Yisrael with the whole yeshiva. And I had a seder because with somehow Rabbi Shai Kohn, that was his cousin, wife's cousin, whatever. There was Rav Shia, was one of the Gedolei Hador. The Yeshiva held his marriage, one of the Gedolei Hador. And he was the Yeshiva Biawistak Yeshiva, which is a little teeny yeshiva. Wasn't the Western, but he was a very, very chosher person. I used to learn with him every Shabbos. After we learned, we would walk every Shabbos to the same shul for Mincha. On the way to Mincha, he would ask me, did you get an aliyah? And every week I would tell him no, because I was single, and the minig in the yeshiva was that on Shabbos, they only gave aliyahs to married guys. The single guys got during the week, and married guys got on Shabbos. So I never got an aliyah on Shabbos. So I always tell him, no, I didn't get an aliyah. Gotta get an aliyah. It's a mitzvah. So we were walking to this minyan. It was a big minyan. There was a lot of very, very chashuv people there, some chashuv Rosh Hashivas davening in that minyan that I recognized. And he would go over to the guy, over to the gabbai, and he said, this happened every week. Give Binyamin aliyah. No, one of the Gedolei Hador tells you, give him an aliyah. So for a whole year, every Shabbos, I got the aliyah from him. I was so embarrassed because, you know, I'm a stranger. I'm an American. I don't belong to this shul. Who is this American kid think he is? Every week he chaps the aliyah. I don't know what people are thinking. I don't know. Okay. What can I do? Okay. At the end of the year, we walk into the shul and the gabbai's not there. And instead, there's some Hasidish kid who became the gabbai. And this kid doesn't know who this Rav Shia is. Rav Shia wasn't like a famous one. He was like a little bit of a nist or whatever. You know, and so I see Rav Shia, he's not going to listen to Rav Shia. He's a wise guy, you know. And Rav Shia is, and I am so happy. Oh, Baruch Hashem, this week I'm not going to get the aliyah. These will be a hefsek. And sure enough, this kid calls up a friend of his for Cohen, calls up a friend of his for Levi, and he walks over to a different friend to ask him his name for Yisrael. And while he's asking the guy his name, Rav Shia was like quite an older person, runs up to the bima, Yamod Binyamin Shlishi. He didn't even know my name, you know, just Yamod Binyamin. Okay. Anyway, I got there. The whole shul was like, you know, you don't do that. Especially not a gadol. And you know, okay. Anyway, so later he tells me, this is your mitzvah, you gotta fight for it. You know? Right? That's what I think the answer here. Ephron has an opportunity of a mitzvah. Do you know what kind of mitzvah Ephron had a chance? We learned in last week's parsha that Oig did a favor to Avram. What was his favor? He told Avram that Lot was captured. Because of that, how long did Oig live? What? 400 years. He lived until the time of Moshe. And Moshe was afraid of him. Why? Rashi says that when Moshe had a fight, Oig, Hashem tells Moshe, Altira. Rashi says, why was Moshe afraid? Because Oig has a schus, that he did a chesed to Avram. Now, Rashi also says that it was by accident, because he was really planning to get Avram killed, because he figured Avram will go and fight the four Melachim, and he'll get killed. But accidentally, he did Avram a chesed. So apparently, doing a chesed to Avram Avinu is big stuff. That time could be a Musar Vad, but I'm not doing that. If you meet a Gadol Hador, you do a chesed to a Gadol Hador, you hit the jackpot. And I'm going off on a tangent because this isn't the topic, but it is very possible to do chesed to Gadol Hador. I did not know. If I would have known, I would have been done better. But when I got a little in Florida, you can't because of no Gedolei Hador, regretfully. But if you live, if there's a place where there are Gedolei Hador and you live there, Gedolei Hador, we think, are very often very needy because they don't drive. Right? My wife used to drive. It's Rav Shia. At the point, you need to drive. You know, at the point, we, you know, they don't drive. They don't. They're not really ready to go to the grocery. Now, not some groceries do, but not a good time not going to the grocery. They're very often they're in poverty because they're not exactly going to come to America to come collecting. They're just going to live in poverty because they're too busy learning. It's okay, so I don't have clothes. I don't have money. Okay, what do I care? I'm learning. So sometimes many Gedolim, they don't let you know, but they're much more needier than you think. And if you make an effort to find out, you can really do chasadim to Gedolei Hador. I don't say Rav Chaim Kanevsky. Rav Chaim Kanevsky is so famous that probably anything that he needs is taken care of. But the next tier, you know, number two, Gedolei Hador, number three, Gedolei Hador, number four, Gedolei Hador, it's very likely if you have a shaychus to them, you'll discover. And I went to one Gadol, and he needed something in the grocery. I went there, so I went to the grocery for him. You know, okay, anyway, the Maisa, I didn't hear that until I got to meet some Chashra people, and I also, some of them, they needed financial help. Not that I wasn't not a gvir to help financially, but he said people needed little money. It was very helpful for some people. Anyway, but that's a side point. But the point of that is, Ephron has this opportunity to do a chesed to Avram Avinu. Avram says, I want to pay. So what Ephron should have said, excuse me, Avram Avinu, I own the Maariv Machpelah. You want the Maariv Machpelah? No paying. Take it or leave it. You offer me this big coins? No, I'm not taking it. Put your foot down, Ephron. Don't be a wimp. Or don't be a, I don't know whether it's Pshat he's a wimp or he doesn't really care. I'm not, you know. Is that it, at the end of the day, he's not a rush. At the end of the day, he ended up doing nothing. He totally lost the mitzvah. He didn't do any mitzvah. He started, he tried to do the mitzvah. And Avram, for whatever reason, had a cheshbon why he resisted. And instead of putting his foot down and saying, excuse me, I want this mitzvah. I am not taking the money. And I'm surely not taking 400 zuz of the best pieces. No way, Avram. If he would have put his foot down, then Avram would have had no choice. And he would have to give him the other money. But he didn't put his foot down. Because he didn't care. Because he really is not so motivated. So that's where he loses the mitzvah. Or because he's a wimp and doesn't have a backbone to stand up. I don't know. I don't want to say that Shinar and Ephron. He's not here, but you never know. So, but whatever it is, so he didn't have, but Lemaisa, he was this close to being in Gan Eden, who knows where, you know? He wasn't, and he just blew it. He blew it because he has his opportunity for a mitzvah and he doesn't fight for it. Because Og the Maisa did do a mitzvah. He accidentally, but he did a mitzvah. Because the Maisa, Og did a chesed to Avram. Ephron didn't do any chesed. When you go to the grocery, the guy sells you something, that's not a chesed. You know, I don't say, I go when you go to the grocery, you say the grocery did you a chesed. He sold you.
If someone says, can I buy it? They can say, no, it's not the grocery.
Okay, but that was a normal price. That was a sorry. Okay, I don't know. Don't ask me a kasha. My shmooze is not mukhrach. Anyway, the maisa. I think it's a gevaldik of the hair. They go ahead and he has a golden mitzvah in his hands, and it becomes a little difficult, and he turns it down. We have to appreciate a mitzvah. I think that, and you have to be ready to fight for mitzvah. So I want to make another application, another example. Well, I'm running late, boy. That's what I told the Rabbi Danziger here. The Maaser Reshiva said the same thing, very similar, in last week's Parsha. Last week's Parsha, it says, Now this one probably is Mukhruch. That Hashem came, that Avimelech comes to Avram, and he says, Hashem Imoch. I can't find the puzzle, but it's somewhere here. That Avimelech comes to Avram, and he says, Hashem Imoch, let's make a bris. So the question is, how did Avimelech know that Hashem Imoch? What did Avimelech see that convinced, this is after Sarah gave birth, then Avimelech comes to Avram and he said wants to make a bris with him because he says Hashem Imoch. Okay, here it is. Here in the Chafal. So the Medrash says, so there are different pshatim in the Medrash. So the Medrash, way there was one pshat in the Medrash learns, is because Avram Avinu moved in to, was living next to Sdom. Sdom was a major metropolitan area, major city. Rich city, major city. And therefore, there was a lot of people traveling, which was great because Avram Avinu was in the Hachnasas Orchim business. People traveling, they need a place to stop along the way to get in this, get some food, water. Great. What happened? Sdom Amora got destroyed. So all of a sudden, Avram Avinu's Hachnasas Orchim business took a big hit. There weren't too many people traveling on this road anymore. I'll say, maybe there's some people. You know, people still, you never know, a guy can travel, but it's not the same. There's no city here anymore. So what does Avram Avinu do? He moved. Puzik said before that Avram Avinu moved. He moved to Avimelech comes. He moved to Gerar. So Avimelech says, a person who goes ahead and he moves. In other words, it's not so easy to move. You know, you're running, you're doing, Avram Avinu is 100 years old. Mistama, he has friends. He has Talmidim, he has a house, right? He has everything. He's settled. Now, for some reason, the mitzvah that he likes to do, he doesn't have as many opportunities. You get up and move. It's a very similar type of thing. So he says, that's what Avimelech was so impressed. Now, I happen to have a story with that too, because there was a friend of mine, which I don't want to give details, so I can't not give details, but it's, whatever. That told me that he went, and I'm changing some of the, basically the keeping the story, but just making minor changes to protect the innocent. So he moved into a certain city. Let's say he came to start a branch, okay, whatever. And he was there for a few years, and it didn't go. Closed. It happens. A lot of our branches, but maybe closed. So he went ahead. Obviously, he lost his job. So instead, he took a job teaching in the elementary school. Sixth grade rabbi, seventh grade, whatever it is. Okay, fine. He's there for, it was, I don't know how many years there when he was trying to run the branch. Now he's there, and then he's there. Now he's there for a whole bunch of years working in the elementary school. So he's there in the city, let's say 20, 30 years. I don't know, he's there a long time. He bumps into the Rosh Hashiva. That's what he tells me. Bumps into Rosh Hashiva. So Rashiva is saying, well, how are you doing? He said, well, what are you up to these days? And teaching sixth grade. He says, you should move. He says, you can do better than that. The guy said, he was like, move? I've been living here for 30 years. I have a house. My kids have friends. My wife has friends. I'm not moving. And it's not like I'm doing nothing. I'm teaching. I'm teaching sixth grade. She says, well, you could do much better than that. I don't say, I'm not trying to knock sixth grade, because then, besides which, but knowing this particular guy, he says, you could have done much more. You should move. Get out of here. The guy was like, his head flew up, And he said, it wasn't like he asked Rashida for advice. Like, Rashida came over there, he's telling Rashida what's doing. I think that my impression was they were just like schmoozing, friendly schmoozing. Meets with Shiva. Shiva came in. He meets him somewhere at a wedding or something. How you doing? What's life? What are you up to? Very nice. What? That's what you're doing? Why don't you should move somewhere else. He said, do you want to do something else? Well, there's no other opportunities in my city, so move. the guy goes, floored. Anyway, that's the same hashgafa. It really is. The same hashgafa. You have to, if you want mitzvahs, it's not enough just to go ahead. If a mitzvah, you know, if I'm convenient, if I'm in the right place at the right time, and a mitzvah comes my way, okay, I'll do it. No, you have to fight for their mitzvahs. That's what Shia told me. You got to fight. You got this. You get this aliyah. This is your aliyah. You got to fight for it. Don't just, you know, okay, someone else wants the aliyah. I'll let him have it. You know? No. You don't just let the other guy have your mitzvah. And you got to fight, and you got to work, and you got to stick your neck out. Zuckerman. Right, we won't go into Rav Zuckerman. Rav Zuckerman was one of the biggest, also Gedolei Hador. He was a very big tzaddik. Rav Zuckerman was from an older Talmud of Radin, and he therefore had a connection to Rav Shiva, because Rav Shiva married Rav Avram Trupp's daughter, who was beside Rav Shiva. Rav David was from Radin. Rav Shiva's father-in-law was one of the Yeshivas of Radin, because his the Gwinnat's oldest son, and. So he knew Rav Zuckerman was a real Radiner. So he knew the Rav Shiva. So he was a famous person in Eretz Yisrael. So he said, he once told us, I was here with Rav David, he said, you know what I find most amazing about the Rav Shiva? He said that Rav Shiva started this idea with branches. So those guys, I don't know if you people know, but you know the yeshiva's history of branches, almost all the first branches were failures. Shiva started a branch in Montreal. That was the first branch. Okay, you know, the yeshiva happened. There's still yeshiva in Montreal, but it's not nothing to do with Chofetz Chaim. The yeshiva afterwards, then they Israel, okay, and then there was Rochester, which was it took a long time. And then there was about five branches that all folded. There was New Haven, which was closed after many years, and, you know, the people went crazy. New Haven was... I don't say it's a failure because there was some Talmidim from there, but it was sort of like, you know, after so much work, you know, New Haven was so much work without getting into. And then there was Dallas. We're in the second Dallas. Dallas is in the second version, but the first Dallas closed. And there was Phoenix that closed. And there was New Orleans that closed. And there was San Diego that closed. And I don't remember where else. And it was Teaneck that closed. And there was a lot of branches that closed. Muncie, okay, that's a later one. When I, Ad Kedei Kach, that when I left the yeshiva, when I was leaving Kodo, a friend of mine told me, you know, it was a question, we were thinking about jobs, a friend of mine said, just a little advice, whatever you do, don't go to a branch. It's Rashiva's pipe dream, and it's totally unrealistic, and just, you know, a close friend of mine told me, like, just keep away from branches. Don't fall for that one. You know, she has this pipe dream. Okay, anyway, so a lot of the early branches had a great deal of trouble. And even those that were successful, they were like years and years till they got off the ground. Wasn't like they got successful right away, you know. They ran for 20 years, 30 years, and they started picking up. So, this Rav Zuckerman told us, says that he finds most of his Tamei Rav Shiva, you go ahead, you go do something, and you get defeated. So most people, you get defeated, you quit. Shiva starts a branch, he gets defeated, starts another one. Gets defeated, starts another one. He said, that's not normal. He said, that's amazing. That's what you have to do. You know, you get knocked down, you do go again, you know, because if you're motivated, you're driven, this is what I got to do. You know, I mean, that's very impressive. I'm agreeing. Rav Zuckerman is saying it's very impressive. But he wasn't saying that it's wrong. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what he's saying. And, you know, if you're fighting, you believe this is my goal, to do our buses, Torah, then the fact that it doesn't go, you try once, right? If you don't succeed, try again, right? Everybody knows that. That's the expression. So that's what he said. So the idea is that I think that is that people, mitzvahs, you know, it's not enough just to do a mitzvah if it's easy. The question is, what happens when it's difficult? What happens when someone wants to interfere? When someone wants to take away the mitzvah from you? Do you put up a fight? You know, I gave an example. I don't know if this is such a good example, but it's a simple example. I was talking that there's a mitzvah of davening with a minyan. Okay, everyone knows that mitzvah. Most people in the yeshiva, Baruch Hashem, keep that mitzvah. Some people don't, but most people do. Okay. There's an extra mitzvah if you're the first 10 for the minyan. Okay. Now, Shachris, Baruch Hashem, we have all these people learning before davening. It's not so easy to be the first 10 to the minyan anymore. Used to be very easy. But let's take mincha. What time do you have to walk in for mincha to be the first 10 for minyan? 2:59, 3:01, yes, that is correct. In other words, you basically, most people will come exactly, even a guy who's mamish makbin on minyan, he'll come exactly when minyan's supposed to start. Why don't you come 1 minute earlier and get the added schuz? And it's not just in yeshiva. If you go to Tarav Emunah, and the same thing, I've seen it. If you go to Young Israel, you go to Shul. The minyan day, a minute before the minyan starts, they usually do not have a minyan. People don't come to the minyan until it's, they're not going to come early. But it don't make no sense to, you come early, you get the mitzvah is increased, double, triple. I don't know, it says you get connected kudam. So it's more than doubled. So people don't spend a little extra tircha, come a minute earlier, get a not an extra tircha. I have to get up an extra minute earlier. You know, I can get an extra minute of sleep, right? So it's a similar vibe. You know, it's one thing. I'll do the mitzvah, but I got to get up an extra minute. Oh, that's too hard. So the message is, I think it's a gewaldige message. Whether that's Reibshah and Ephron or not, I cannot say. But it's a good message. The message is that it's not enough just to do a person. You can't just go through life and expect for mitzvahs to fall in your lap. And you're, okay, a mitzvah falls in your lap, I'll do it. You know, if I'm walking down the canal and I see someone drowning, I'll save the person's life, you know? I'm ready to do that, you know? I'll even jump in and save the person's life. Maybe not, but okay. But, you know, but that's not enough. Shiva says, you got to move. You got to go search it out. You got to be matriach. You got to work hard to find the mitzvah. I added to myself when I was in Israel. I mean, okay, we're running out of time. When I was in Israel, so I was very happy in living in Israel. And then this crazy offer came to come to Miami, and whatever it is, without getting into story, but okay, you know. So, but then it was very difficult to move from Israel to Miami. You know, all my kids were Israeli, and we had friends, and we lived there for 14 years already. And then I heard that someone else was interested in taking the job in Miami. And they were even considering it, you know. So the Rashiva happened to be in Israel for Pesach. So I told the Rashiva the good news. I said, you know, I heard that someone else is, you know, it's not like they're stuck. They got another person. Now there's another candidate. So I thought I was off the hook. So Rashiva said, so you got to put up a fight. I didn't want to fight for it. But they told me, you know, you got to fight for it. You know, I'm very happy in Israel. I don't want to fight for this job. But that's what he told me. So that is a hashkafa, that you got to fight for mitzvahs. You have to be ready. Otherwise, you'll just end up, big mitzvahs don't just fall in your lap. That's the way it is. And hashkacha of mitzvahs, where Hashem doesn't just give you mitzvahs. You know, you sit home and do you, and then you think the mitzvahs are going to come raining in Shemayim. You have to, it's mitzvah gereres, mitzvah, et cetera, et cetera. And you have to fight for your mitzvahs. You have to work hard for your mitzvahs. And so we have to go ahead and not, we have to plot for mitzvahs, think about mitzvahs, stick our neck out for mitzvahs. If we have a mitzvah and someone's trying to take it away, we put up a fight. Okay, yeah, sometimes it's Siman HaShalom. You don't put up a fight, but you got to know. But it's Min HaStam. You fight. This is your most precious possession, a mitzvah. You gotta, and you can't be a wimp. Either you can't be a wimp, you can't be afraid of standing up, which is a, you know, sometimes we're like that too. I'm gonna argue the guys. So, and okay. Anyway, there you should go.